Hi there, welcome to the Embodied Educator podcast. And this is a spontaneous solo recording after bringing a couple of lines of information together by speaking to different people. And it's also like an after thinking of my interview with Kai, Dr. Kai Singh Tan, about neurodiversity. And so I was talking to a fellow embodied educator coach who works a lot with neurodiverse writers, and she's also been involved in education in the past about neurodiversity. And I asked her, just out of curiosity, like, how can we address neurodiverse children and students in class? And she said the following. So when children are between the age of 6, 7 till 9, you want to start with movement before thought work. Their way in, especially on a neurodiverse scale, is through movement. And then you have the age group between 9 to 24-ish, which is where the frontal lobe is working more. But they have all these experiences going on. And her advice was meet their emotional needs, which is so beautiful because this addresses the heart. Meet them at the heart where you can. Oh, I'll turn my phone off. So sorry. Perfectly imperfect, right? Flight mode. So meet them at their heart, you know, so don't just go for logic or steps or, you know, the fixed protocols or processes and exercises, but really let them connect with their emotional need. So how do you feel, for example, working with the idea of connecting your sensations to thoughts, to feelings, to address better their needs? And for older, after the 24-ish people, well, of course, we think a lot when we use our brain. And she said this wonderful sentence, approach it with a process and not an answer. Search for an experience. And that is exactly why I want to also point out some other work that addresses that underlying idea of neurodiversity doesn't need fixing. It's not like something that will that needs to be taken away. It will always be there, you know, neurodiverse people, me included, have a different wire, are differently wired and perceive the world in different ways than the neurotypicals. So it's a process, and look at it as a process. And that can vary between working alone and working in groups, because for some groups are very triggering when you're on the neurodiverse spectrum. So realize that from a neurodiverse perspective, it needs variation. And same goes for quiet. Provide quiet spaces as well as noisy or sounding spaces. But normally, on a neurodiverse spectrum, there is higher sensitivity going on, and especially to experiences around in the surrounding, like sound. So, oh, and this, there's an example on Kai, Dr. Kai Singh Tan, her website, where she went to a conference, and there's a photo. I'll put the link in the show notes where she said there were yoga mats available. There were how do you call them? Earphones that you can put in your ears to block sound, right? Noise cancelling headphones. Thank you. There were noise cancelling headphones. There were fidget bags available on the conference, just for the taking, for everyone's needs. So you could check in with yourself what it was that you needed in order to be present at the conference. And I love that idea where you're also not just putting people in a certain mode all the time because it's easier for the teaching, because it's easier for the classroom, because it's just what we have, but address the personal needs, because that is the only way in for a neurodiverse body to engage in learning and to accommodate their needs, to help them figure out their needs and then to accommodate as well. And then another level, we had alone versus group, and we had quiet versus sound. And then you can also really vary between writing and speaking or even recording, because different brains process information differently, right? I mean, as teachers, I think we all have in our teaching course been taught that there's a difference between visual and textual people, which is also a level, but it's also about the way we process the information we're learning. And some love writing, some need speaking, some need recording, even some need, for me, as a person who always loves dancing, I can actually translate it to movement for myself sometimes to really engage with what I'm learning or saying and trying to express, you know, true level of embodiment. And allowing that process and addressing that in the teaching can also be a very inclusive way of accommodating neurodiverse students in your classroom. So that was such a fascinating conversation and addresses the quality of for our educators to meet our students, our children, where they are. Meeting our students, our children, where they are. And that is, I believe, so important to change also the perspective of our classroom, where it starts with them and their needs and their place of being on that day, on that year, in that life, and not just our content that we have to teach, not just our classroom, our learning goals that we have to match. Of course, that's also important. I'm not saying ditch them, but just the intention, the starting point of meeting our students where they are. And now maybe also to go a step back, because I just tuned in on a very practical, tactical level on neurodiversity. But what is neurodiversity? Well, neurodiversity refers to the infinite variations in neurocognitive functioning, reflecting the diversity of human minds. We all experience the world differently because of neurodiversity. And individuals who identify as neurodivergent have cognitive variations that result in ways of communicating, thinking, and learning that are significantly diverse from the dominant societal standard of what is normal. This includes those with autism, ADHD, ADD, areas of developmental and learning disability, and other neurodivergent conditions. And it also may include divergency relating to trauma or traumatic brain injury or any ACEs that came up early in life, early adulthood. So the myth of normal, as Gabor Mate also talks about, right? Like, what are dominant societal standards? And that brings us back to the beginning of for me, the importance of not wanting to fix our students and children in our classroom, but rather provide you with more neurodiverse affirming practices to think about how can you create that. And so a neurodiverse affirming practice recognizes there's no one right way of being human in the world. Not one right way of being human in the world. All ways are celebrated. And I think this is a beautiful starting point because it also addresses that it starts with how are you being in life and not how can we make learning more efficient. But actually the way you are, the way you're being in life is also the way you're showing up in the classroom, right? And this actually holds for our students, our children, as much as teachers, because I'm also one in the spectrum of neurodiverse teacher and how I address and how can I show up in my classroom the way I need, and also in the system, in the school, in our education system, accommodate it for me. Which brings me back to another example that I found on Dr. Kaising Tan's website, which was about a job. And they wrote a job application form and they noticed that the qualities for that job were really meeting qualities of certain neurodiverse qualities. So they set out this job requirement specifically for aiming for neurodiverse workers, for neurodiverse people to apply. And they explicitly asked for their qualities because they know they match the job requirement. Because there's sometimes certain qualities that show, and I think that's a beautiful way of matching qualities and finding a real inclusive way of embracing different people in your learning or working space. And neurodiversity is underscoring that unique needs, strengths, and interests are approached through an affirming lens if you talk about neurodiverse affirming practice, where you tend not to want to fix, but you actually embrace the individuals. So they're not, differences are not viewed as deficits that require fixing. Moreover, individuals are empowered in their uniqueness and recognized as the expert in their experience, embodiment, and communication style. And therefore also, they can work with their self-determined strategies and sensory needs. And when we work in, you know, a neurodiverse affirming practice, we support and accommodate also their needs and not just the normal setting. And the self-identified goals and needs of the individual in this neurodiverse affirming practice are a priority. And while the potential impact of societal barriers, intersectionality, and environmental factors are validated and addressed as part of building a neurodivergent affirming education system, a system where we care for one another. And I think that is a beautiful way. So when we talk about this neurodiverse affirming practice, it talks about intersectionality, respecting autonomy, validating differences, presuming competence, reframing expectations, promoting self-advocacy, rejecting neuronormativity, prioritizing lived experience, nurturing positive self-identity, adapting systems and environments, and honoring all forms of communication. You don't want to know how often I felt like an alien at school, because I, even in my relationship, sometimes as a high sensitive ADD person living with an ADHD person, I talk feelings, I breathe feelings, and sometimes I just, that's the first level for me of communicating in my facial expression, in my bodily language, on so many levels. But I've noticed that that's not normal for my environment and often misinterpreted in many ways that caused me a lot of harm, or basically me, where others felt like I was annoying, I was too emotional, I was too present, I was taking up the space in a certain way that wasn't allowed. So if you really want to, open up the space on an inclusive and diverse level that addresses the body as well, because neurodiversity also lives in our bodies. But there's also a challenge when working with the body in neurodiversity, and not just neurodiversity. And this is also beautiful work of Kathy Melchiorri, PhD, and she part of her work is called "The Body Holds the Healing." And I'll address a quote of her and then bring you a little explanation and road into how to especially work with neurodiversity around children. But I think, well, for me, on a somatic level, it works as powerful as an adult. And I will want to continue working this way. So I'm reading this quote from Kathy Melchiorri, which is a wonderful expert on lots of neurodiverse work from the expressive arts and sensory processing background. Express it to address it. When we do not have words to convey our sensations, feelings, or thoughts, we cannot simply name it to tame it, but we can use implicit communication like movement, rhythm, sound, image, enactment, and play to express it, to address it. And this is the transformative and restorative role of expressive arts, to provide a voice when language is unavailable or impossible. And I've talked about this before on the podcast as well, because this is also an element when working with and through the body, when there is, a blockage or a fear when using the body. And this addresses another layer, like using language alone is not always possible to communicate what we are sensing, what we're experiencing, what we are thinking or feeling. And especially neurodiversity can make using words challenging, even charging. You don't want to know how many arguments I have with my partner, who's very particular on what I'm saying, and me, actually, who's on the chaotic side and expressing and wanting to go quick, but not as perfectionistic on the words, more and getting the stuff out. We have arguments all the time because he really finds it important using specific words. And that's how he's wired, and that's how neurodiverse people can be wired. So I think it's very important to know when dealing with neurodiversity, first of all, for yourself, maybe as a teacher and as an educator, and in your classroom with your kids, your children, the students, the pupils, that their behavior is often steered from different senses, feelings, and ways of perceiving. So, but fortunately, there are many other ways to convey experiences, and that's where embodiment comes in. And expressive and sensory-based approaches offer a variety of channels for communication. And especially in arts and sensory processing, these support capacity, and they are creating moments of resiliency, of mastery, confidence, and also, which is very important, self-agency. And they're truly neuroaffirming experiences for those who may not necessarily feel comfortable with or respond to traditional ways of expressing, relating, learning, or interacting. And so that is addressing arts work where and sensory processing, where you're connecting the body and opening up to a way of perceiving and allowing information to come up, to show up, without putting it into a quality, a context, gradings, you know, any framework that has a certain expectation around it. And that is creating a setup where the neuroaffirming practice can be introduced. So I will link you to the show notes to some work of Dr. Kathy Melchiodi, and she has wonderful courses and experiences with this. And this is where I want to leave you regarding thinking about and working with experiencing maybe neurodiversity in your classroom. And I really look forward to hear from you if you're, if this lands for you, if you recognize some stuff, if you think, what is she talking about? Please feel free to send me a message through LinkedIn or Instagram to connect in how you maybe work with neurodiversity in your classroom, maybe even on an embodied level. And or pass the episode on. If you think it's information that needs to be shared with the world, I love to hear from you. Maybe somebody else loves to hear this or from you. So, yes, thank you for checking in and stay well.